Welcome to our Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology office hours call for the month of May 2015. These are the calls where you can come and ask questions about whatever it is that you're studying at this point. Most of our programs are self-paced, so people are at different points in the program. This is an open call that's for all the different programs that we have running at this time, which means right now it's IRSPT and the full Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training Program. And if you're new and you're just started with us with IRSPT recently, the Insulin Resistance Program, welcome. It's really nice to have you here. I'm excited to welcome you to our community if you're new and to really embrace you into this fold of amazing practitioners who are basically here to change the health of the world because we care. We care about people and we want to end needless suffering. So if you're new to RSPT, this is just, you know, basically a call that you can come to and ask questions. Obviously, you probably don't have many questions yet about the materials or your patients and how to apply it because you just recently got into it. But this is the place to come. If for those of you joined recently, we will have a call on more of a kickoff orientation type call with coaching and Q&A in a couple of weeks. I think it's on the 16th of May so that everybody that's new can, you know, come together and join us and be united in coming it through the program together. So I welcome you, and I'll just give everybody a brief run through of how these calls work. These are Q&A calls, question and answer, and coaching. So basically, if you have any questions at all about the materials, the content, if you have questions about how to apply particular things to a client, you have questions about labs that you've run on a client and you want to get a little help in getting those analyzed, this is the place to come. If you're in just the IRSPT program, know that you're going to maybe have some cursory learning. As these programs grow, we may switch it out, or if there's a demand for more of these calls and separate them into just the insulin resistance, then we will do that. But at this point, early on in this new round of people coming through, there aren't enough to make it worth having a second call, but we might just do that. You do, those of you who have just joined recently, have three extra calls that are just IRSPT calls, and those are scheduled in May, June, and July. And then you also have access to these calls for about 5 months, so you get to continue it after, even after you've maybe made it through all the materials. You're going to meet a lot of folks here who are in our Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training, so they may have questions that seem off-topic to you, but it's a great way to learn and to grow in your clinical skills, and we welcome those kinds of questions. So open, the way that we work these calls is it's a *2 to raise your hand. I'll open up your line. You can ask your question. If you're like long distance and you're just listening in on the web, you can also ask questions very easily by going to on the place where you're listening below. Just keep scrolling down. There's two places. There should be a spot that says Q&A. And there should be a spot that says chat. The better place is the chat because it's a two-way conversation and others can see your question and possibly even answer your question or give you a link. And we also share lots of links and resources that way. And then if you put it into the Q&A, only I can see it. So I'll be going back and forth there. The other way to submit questions is there's an INE Office Hours Ask the Doctor page. And you can link to that from your dashboard when you get into the program. You have to be logged in, and it's under support, and it says Ask the Doctor, INE Office Hours Place, and you can just put in your questions there, and then we'll go, and Lynn usually looks at those in advance, and she will, Lynn usually looks at these in advance, and she will just let me know if there are any questions there, and then I can look there. So I have one hand up, that's Jamie, and I don't see any other questions coming in. Just to clarify, there were somebody is asking about slides. These are strictly Q&A calls, so there's no slides. Sometimes we do a screen share if somebody has a lab that I feel like I want everybody to see in order to get the best benefit from reading that. And if that's the case, then the place to go is join.me. We don't have that open right now because I don't have any intention of that, but if you want to just go there, you know, if we need to, we'll go there to share a screen. So I've got the first question coming in from Jamie. Hello, Jamie.
Hi, Rita Marie. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just beautifully.
Very good. Very good. Just hopefully a quick and easy question tonight. I just wanted to ask, have you had any experience with PCR and DNA stool testing with, the GI map test from Diagnostic Solutions?
Mm. Not that one. At least they used to. There was a test from Genova before Metametrics and Genova merged, and they had a PCR test. And I've run that a few times. I would always get frustrated with it because I was always looking for the sensitivities, like what is this bug going to respond to? And almost every single person I ran it through, it would say XYZ organism found, found, whether it's parasite or yeast or bacteria or whatever. And they'd say taxonomy unknown. And I go, okay. And then they would say in the description, like, this could be just superfluous, like something from a pet. We don't think this is clinically significant. Yet I found that the people that was happening with, it seemed to be that they had clinical symptoms, and I was trying to get to the root of it. So I would just assume, especially when it was a 4+, like a 4+ parasite, you don't know what it is, and you're telling me that's not clinically significant. That kind of got me a little annoyed. So I stopped doing those. I started doing the doctor's data, which is pure stool and culture. I heard Dr. Amin was saying yesterday when we did our NEPT call that he just assumes, yeah, that's fine, but he just assumes that there's a bug there. We don't need to know what it is. We're just going to apply antiparasitic protocols and then retest. And that's basically what his approach was. And that's basically what I was doing with it. But then I felt like, well, so, you know, I'm kind of torn between, I like the idea of testing for the DNA. Because because you don't always, not always able to culture things. I mean, you don't always know what things are, right? You can't culture something, but if they find something, then they can do it. So that's basically my.
Come on a lot in the last year or so. Cause I know the reason I was asking is cause I've spoken to a few practitioners over the last week or so, and they've had to play around with different PCR testing. And they said that the DRG that was coming back with some quite dodgy results, but they were saying with the GI map Diagnostic Solutions, they were getting much more clinically significant results. So I know it's a fairly new test that's come out, so it might just be worth exploring and looking
at. Worth revisiting, yeah, because I was on the bandwagon with that as soon as they came out, as soon as Genova came out, but I was like, oh, this makes sense, let me do it. But then I was getting these iffy results, and I was finding it more useful to run the ones that actually did the cultures and sensitivities on them. And so I started doing that. But then in when Dr. Jess was talking yesterday, he was really a big proponent of that. And I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to that, but you will love his presentation. No. If you haven't, you will absolutely love it.
Oh, okay. Was he talking about this? Was he on the call?
Well, he was on yesterday. He talked. It was you didn't get an email about that?
I did, but I think it was probably in the middle of the night for me, was it? What time?
It was later-ish. Yeah, it was 5:00. So you were probably sleeping.
Yeah.
5:00 here.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a really good one. It was on neurotransmitters and brain chemistry and the whole thing.
Yeah,
and
great.
Really great. It was really great. And we all just loved his, he calls himself a teddy bear, and I would agree. He just like had such
a
warm
guy.
Heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead and listen to that if you haven't.
Okay. Awesome. I will do. Yeah, no, I like, I've done some consultations and stuff with Jess. I think it's really good. Him and Sean, very good.
Great.
Okay, that was all it was tonight, just to sort of put that out there because I'd heard quite good feedback from it and just wanted to see.
Good. And have you run it yet, or you just have feedback from other practitioners?
No, I haven't run it personally, but I'm going to. I've got a few clients that I was going to run the BioHealth 401H. I thought I would take the risk and run this test and see.
Okay, and the name of the company is Health Diagnostics. Is that what you said?
Diagnostic Solutions. David Brady's been behind it, the development of it. So
he used to be at Genova.
I think he was at Metametrics. He might have even been at Genova. I think you're right. And then he's moved over to consult with Diagnostic Solutions. And also, he consults with another company as well, I think, off the top of my head. I was actually just listening to a webinar he was doing, and he was talking about it on there. I can send you the, let me send you this, actually. I'll put it on here. This was a presentation that he did for a group of practitioners in the UK, talking about molecular identification of the GI microbiota within the management of autoimmune disease. So I will put it in the chat for you and you can have a look.
Awesome. Thank you. Beautiful. And Lynn just put up a link to the diagnostic solutions. Yeah, I was motivated to revisit it after his talk yesterday because I was like, okay, maybe I'll revisit this because I was really excited about it when it first came out and then I got really disappointed about the results and then so I stopped doing them. So I may revisit it. Thank you for bringing it up.
Perfect. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome. Bye.
You soon. Thanks, Richard.
Okay. Who else? Questions, comments? I'm going to look in the Q&A, and then I'll look on the site. Lynn, were there any in the site on the Ask the Doctor? Should I look there? Okay. Yeah, we do have a few. Agnes, is there a manual for insulin resistance coaching besides the digital resources? If you mean a physical manual, Agnes, no, there's no physical manual. But there is a down, once you log in and you go, you'll see all the modules there, and I recommend you do them one by one because you can get overwhelmed. There's a lot there. And on the last page, it's listed as a module, but it's downloads. And everything, every document in there. And if you look at that document, that download page, it's kind of overwhelming if you haven't been through the program before, if you haven't watched the videos and all. But everything is there in downloadable form. Yeah. Yeah, Sheila, great. Can you explain the best way to use and learn from the program? The best thing to do, Sheila, is to start at the beginning, to start with module one, to learn about the, you know, review the overview. Some of that is already stuff that I talked about in the call that I did, the open webinar that I did, where I introduced the program, but it's a review and then somewhat deeper. So I would go through the introduction module, then go through the assessments. So you would watch the video. First, do the pretest. There's a pretest. I don't know if the pretests are up yet, but there will be a pretest for each test. Do the pretest so it gives you a preframe on what you already know in going into it. Then do the module and take a look at the resources that we provide there. And we always give you the objectives of what we want you to learn in this module, what you want me to be able to do. I would also find someone, whether it's a family member or it's a friend or a client, that you can actually guide through the process. So start with the assessments and say, okay, let's go through these assessments. Let's use the insulin resistance questionnaires. You're welcome to modify those. There's a lot of done for you, so you can modify them to use as your own, or you're welcome to use them as is and just use them. Get used to it, using it a while, and then see, oh, I'd like to add this question or take away that question or what. So I would just go through the module by module, go through each piece of the module, make sure you feel really comfortable, and then apply it. I think there should be a next steps piece in each module that says, okay, what do you do to actually put this into action? When you feel comfortable with what's in that particular one, then you move on to the next one, and the next one, and the next one. So that's basically it. And then come to these calls. There will be three calls that are there specific to IRSPT. So I'll take you through. I'll see where you're at. I'll check in with you. The first one's on May 16th, so that gives you a little bit of time. If you were one of the people that got the bonus of the Before Be Gone program for one of your clients, we're in the process of setting that up so we can give you a link to be able to give them, or a coupon code so that you can be able to give them that and get that set up. We're in the background. We're trying to make that Before Be Gone a little bit more self-guided for people to take through so that they get, you know, emails and whatnot to tell them when to do particular activities. So we're working on that in the background, which is why we haven't given you access to that link yet, but we will. But in the meantime, you have access to all those materials from our blood sugar balancing program. You have access to the recipe guide. I would recommend that you play around and see how you like the recipe guides. In the assessment modules, I recommend that you buy your own glucose meter and that you play with it. And you start tracking yourself, and then you start working with somebody else if you haven't done this before. Just kind of to get a sense of what does it feel like, so you're going to be able to counteract the objections if it hurts too much, or how cumbersome is it, or how excited are you getting by seeing results that you weren't expecting, or by confirming that the foods you're eating are really good for your particular case. And then just go through them step by step. I would say reach out in the Facebook group on a regular basis. There's a check-in, just do a check-in on a regular basis and see how everybody else is doing. If you have any questions, certainly post them there. And then come to these monthly calls and then the other calls. So you'll have two calls in every month where you can come through and get access to me and the community. The community is available 24/7 pretty much. Some people are in Europe, like Jamie, who he may be posting while you're sleeping and vice versa. So you'll pretty much see that no matter what you get on, you're gonna get some help. And hopefully that helps. Let me go back and see. Let me know, type back in again, and let me know if that helps to give you some direction. Yeah. Judy, that's great. Is there a bit, vegan source for HDL? That I don't know. I don't know if there's a synthetic form. I think most of them are betaine, and they're usually from animal sources, and they have pepsin in them and that sort of stuff, which is an animal derived. I personally like to start with bitters. I personally am not the big fan of HDL just because you can get yourself in trouble. There are cases where it's really blatant and clear that somebody needs it. But I usually do start with bitters and having them chew and having them, you know, calm themselves. And there's a whole lot of other things. And bitters can be amazing. Yeah. Carol, I registered for the IRP program. Haven't received any materials. It's all ready, so it might have gotten in your spam folder and all. You're already in our membership, I believe, because you've been to Shine or something, or you have purchased Shine. So you just have to log in with your regular user ID and password, and you should see on your sideboard IRSPT, and that's the INE members site. If you have any trouble with that, I would recommend that you write to helpdesk@drritamarie.com, and Christina will reply and help you get, maybe you missed your email and you don't have your password, and you can always just go into inemembers.com and use the user ID is basically your email. You just put in your email address in the user field. You say lost password, you put your user ID there, you click, and then you'll get sent your password by mail. Or you'll get sent a reset, I don't remember which. Okay, I'm refreshing to see. Oh, there are. Sheila, great. Great. Super. And please, just reach out at any point in time. Reach out to help desk if it's something technical. There's a technical support page on the site where Stacy monitors, and she's the designer of the whole website, and she can answer your questions or help you find something. You can reach out on the Facebook group, and Lynn occupies that a lot, and so do a lot of other members. So there's always ways to get your questions answered, and just dig in and become part of the community. So super. Let me see on the chat. Good, Jamie. And the one thing you're going to find, you're going to get all kinds of great resources on these calls. So if you open up the chat and watch, Lynn has this amazing knack of as soon as anyone says anything, she finds the website. I mean, I wish I had such quick on the draw skills, but she finds them. So anytime we talk about anything, Lynn puts up a link. And Jamie is a great resource as well. He just put up a link for a presentation that you may want to take a look at. So let me refresh again, and then let me go see if anybody, and if you're on the phone, I love to talk to you live, so raise your hand. I know that Alma had submitted something. She wanted to go through some labs, but I don't see her on here. So Alma, if you're on, maybe that's you with your Oakland, raise your hand, and I'll take a look at whatever labs you submitted. Hello? Is that Alma in Oakland?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, can you hear me, Doc?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, that's me with the Oakland raised hand. I was hoping if you wouldn't mind taking a look at the SI test.
Sure. I'm looking. Well, Lynn said she put it in the folder, and I'm looking at case studies, NEPT case studies.
No, it's under, I just did it under file uploader.
Yeah, I know, but she was supposed to be under, oh, here we go. It's under, okay, got it. Okay, Lynn, I don't know where you put it. Alma.zip? 4.6? No, that's last month. Let me look. Apparently my Dropbox doesn't always get synced to hers, so sometimes she puts things in and I'm not sure. And Lynn, just type in the name of the folder that you put it in because something's all scurry. I might be able to find it. Is it under INE? Maybe it's just under INE and then it's case studies. Give me a second. Um, Yeah, so you did it as an uploader. So I'm going to have to open that up because wherever Lynn put it, it's not showing up for me. So give me a second to find it. And Lynn, type in there and let me know where you put it. If it'll be quicker if I can find where you put it. If not, I'll just have to go get it again. One second. Pound NEPT case studies. And that folder looks like it's dead. It looks like there's nothing in it. Yeah, it's completely dead on my computer. Like there's nothing in it. So that's weird. Okay, so I will go to Dropbox and I'll look it up there. So it's under files. That's kind of scary because we had a lot of stuff in there. NEPT case studies. Alma. There's a lot more in here. Why are there just a few? I don't understand. All right, so it was the adrenal test from 2 hours ago. And
I uploaded it yesterday.
It was yesterday, yeah. Okay, got it. All right,
and I'll open that up. The one I uploaded a couple hours ago was thyroid. It was just three numbers. I was just wondering if you could also take a quick look at that. It was just the TSH, T4. Free and free T3.
Okay, we'll take a look at that. We'll look at the BioHealth. So for those of you who are in the IRSPT program, we're talking about a test for the adrenals. And this is an important test, and it's listed in IRSPT as part of a good things to do to test to see why people have blood sugar imbalances, because adrenal stress is one of those things. So I'm quickly going to... I'm just taking a look at her numbers, and I can show this. If you go to join.me, I can show it on the screen so everybody else can see what I'm talking about, because I know it can be a little disconcerting when you can't. So just join.me/DrRitaMarie, and that link should have been in your email. If it's not, please tell me. But it should be in the INE office hours emails. Yeah, there's Lynn. Okay, so I'm going to share my screen. And if you go to that, Lynn, put that link into the chat, please. So what's really cool about it is I can just put up a lab. So if you have a lab for one of your clients and you want me to take a look at it during one of these calls, just let me know. So it's the join.me/DrRitaMarie. Lynn just put it in. I don't think it's www.joinme, is it? I think it's just join.me. Yeah. Oh, okay, that works too. Oh, that's good to know. Okay. Yeah, so that's great. So here, this is a lab on the adrenals, and it tests the cortisols at different times a day. She's got the morning, the noon, the afternoon, nighttime. Some people actually get an extra one, which is middle of the night, if people are having trouble where they're waking up a lot. And when I read one of these, I usually go to the first thing is cortisol sum to see, you know, give me an estimate of what stage of adrenal fatigue they're in. So with a 24, it's within the low end of the normal range. It's not necessarily optimal, but it's in the lower end of the reference range. I like to see it somewhere towards the middle, you know, either side a little bit of the middle. So it's low, but it's not abnormally low. So we usually say, well, it's probably a stage 2. When the cortisol is normal. So we look at other things. Well, she's got, you know, decent cortisol in the morning, 17.2, very low on the borderline at noon, and then it gets super low in the afternoon and at night. The one I'm more concerned about is the afternoon, generally low cortisol at night, and just helps you to sleep better. So you've got basically very low at that middle afternoon, and your DHEA, this is the kicker, when that DHEA is low, even when the cortisol is normal, that's a clear indication that you're in stage 2, but you're heading to stage 3. You're very low here, and you're heading to stage 3. So is that basically what you picked up?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was even thinking stage 3. But
yeah,
you're
right on the edge of stage 3.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You still got a little bit of oats in the morning, but it just drains as the day goes on. So ways to help that would be with using some of the more adaptogenic herbs that are more stimulating at times during the day. And licorice, if you don't have high blood pressure, could be helpful if you don't have an allergy to it. So you have any problems with blood pressure? Whenever you're talking to people about licorice, you always want to ask about their blood pressure because they have a tendency towards higher blood pressure. Cortisol, licorice is so good at stimulating adrenal function that could actually raise the blood pressure. So do you have normal or low blood pressure?
Yeah, I tend to have on the low side blood pressure, so that would be fine. As of right now, most of the adaptogens I take are in the morning, but judging by this test, should I be aiming like between noon and 4?
Here's what I would do. That's probably why you're doing so well in the morning. That might be why you're doing so well in the morning. But
the day of the test, I didn't take anything, and 3 days before the test. And I was so tired. Test was the hardest for me to take of all, between the urine and the stool and everything. This was the hardest because I had to give up all the stuff days before.
Oh, man. So you were taking your adaptogens throughout the morning, but then you didn't do them later in the day?
Well, generally I take them in the morning, then I take
I would add another dose. Mm-hmm. I would add another dose. If you're not already doing licorice, I'd probably do licorice, right around, lunchtime or slightly thereafter and just try to work on those later ones, okay? But don't take licorice after that. You could take licorice in the morning if you wanted to. Just watch because your noon one is already starting to go down. So maybe at 10 a.m., take a little licorice, and then maybe again at 1 or 2 p.m., have a little licorice in there. And then I would add your adaptogens later. And you obviously, we don't know what it was before unless you did one of these before. So you could be that you're moving in the right direction, right? You might not be going into stage 3. You might be coming out of stage 3, right? Think about it.
Think about the positive.
Yeah, you're coming out of it and moving up. So that's what I would do. Your DHA is low. So you could consider getting some of the Biomatrix DHA drops and using those, maybe 2 of them 3 times a day. If you wanted to. And pregnenolone, you could do that. 2 of them, 3
DHA,
times a day.
3 times,
3 times
a day.
And then you can do the pregnenolone as well.
Pregnenolone. And how much of that do you recommend? I did already order both of those.
Oh, you did? Okay, great. With the pregnenolone, for stage 2 bordering on 3, I'd probably go in the 12 drops 3 times a day, but ease into it and see how it goes. If you tend to be real sensitive, if you're working with a patient who's real sensitive, you want to really ease them into stuff because some people, they only need tiny, tiny dose. Sequoia, I don't know if she's on today, but Sequoia did pregnenolone, but she did it for like 6 months, but she only did like a few drops. She only did a really little bit, and she got into, majorly excess. So you just have to be careful. But most people, that's about the right dose. It's a small enough dose. It's not like the 100 milligram capsules that a lot of people do take. I don't like to put, if you're going to put a hormones or a hormone-like substance in the body, you want to put it in physiological doses the way the body normally would. Otherwise, because of the negative feedback loop, the body perceives it's there, so it stops making it.
So that would be 12 drops pregnenolone.
I would say 12. Shoot for 12 3 times a day. Yep.
And this DHA, pregnenolone, is this meant to just jumpstart my system? It's not going to depend on that.
You want to stick to those small doses. And then you start to ease it back. Once you start to see the test normalize, then you don't just stop it. That's a big mistake that people make, huge mistake that people make and practitioners make as well. Oh, just take this for 3 months and then you're done. No, you want to ease back, right? You look at if your DHA numbers are coming into normal, then I would go down to twice a day, and then maybe do that for a month, and then once a day. So ease it back so your body has the time to come in and do its thing. Because you're not going to really suppress it much. You're just filling in the blanks right now. Okay. Mm-hmm. The whole point is you want to be supporting your adrenals nutritionally with, good food, vitamin C, the B vitamins, zinc, magnesium. Those nutrients are super important. And you're rebuilding it, and you're minimizing the stress that got you into this situation. Right, so you always have to address the stress. So if you're addressing the stress, which is the fire, and you're rebuilding with nutrition, then you take these temporarily while your body's learning how to make them. Right? Difference is if somebody has you know, some kind of surgery and they've had some place, something happen where they can't make it anymore. But our job is to stimulate the body back into doing what it's supposed to be doing and giving it the raw materials it needs.
I know you're probably, caffeine is the worst for adrenals, right?
You know, yeah, caffeine, here's the thing, it makes you feel good because it brings you up, right? So the way I usually work with it is somebody's in stage three or they're really exhausted without their caffeine, I'll try to shift you to a better form of caffeine, like instead of coffee, maybe green tea or matcha.
That's what I drink.
And then just go ease it back. Well, figure out, get the licorice in there, right? Make sure you're doing more of your adaptogens to help to supply you with that energy. And then just ease back on the coffee. Because you don't want to go plummeting and walking around like a zombie, right?
Yeah.
And have that reaction. But you want to train your body not to need that burst. I think the licorice will help a lot because there is a mechanism that's somewhat similar between caffeine.
And what about cacao? Chocolate and cacao.
I mean, there's a small amount of caffeine, and that's a better way to, I believe, personally, maybe people would disagree with me, but I believe it's a better way than coffee because it does have a lot of really nice neurotransmitter effects and all. But again, it's all caffeine, so there are times when you do it. You know, if I'm up at midnight and I have to stay up till 4 and I have all this work to do, I may go make myself a cup of Cordyceps cacao hot chocolate. Right? To do that because I'm trying to get my body to do something it shouldn't do. If I gave myself coffee at that point, that's not nourishing me into the situation. That's just like kicking me in the pants to try to get me in that situation. Okay? So just make sure you're nourishing with the B vitamins and all and back off on the caffeine little by little.
Okay. All right. And then I don't know if you have it in front of you. I can just read you the numbers for the thyroid, the three numbers.
Yeah.
For the TSH was 1.77. The free T3 is 2.2, and the range is 2.3 to 4.2. And the free T4 is 0.9. The range is 0.8 to 1.8.
Okay. So first of all, those ranges are useless. Right? Those are the lab ranges. So whenever you're quoting ranges, always look in the Master Health Tracker for the ranges. Okay? So the ranges for the ideal range, optimal range for the T4, free T4, is like 0.98 up to, I don't remember the upper range of it, but so you're below the bottom of the optimal range. You're at the top of what's considered the, okay, so it's low. But your T3 is also quite low because the ideal range is 3 to 3.5 is ideal, right? You're at 2.2. Now, the thing I look at, and we'll learn this when we do our thyroid training module, is that I like to look at the ratios between them. And off the top of my head, I know that 0.9 is closer to 0.98 than 2.2 is to 3, right?
Yeah.
So there is a conversion issue going on there. Okay, but there's also an issue of not enough T4, so I would need to know the total T4 to see if it's a thyroid output problem or if it's a problem with binding globulins. Because remember, the total takes into account the amount of the hormone that's bound to a protein circulating in your blood. Again, we'll get more into detail on this and thyroid stuff, and if you want to really dig deep with it, in the SHINE conference a couple of years ago, we did that, and also the Thyroid Revive and Thrive program, which you have access to. We have more stuff about that, and we have a whole lab interpretation thing. But and there's a chart where you can plot them out to see how far off you are. So your TSH was good. It was like 1 point something. Yeah.
Your TSH
is really good, perfect, but your T3 and T4 are low. So without the total T4, I'm guessing at where it is. So this is one of the things that the reasons that I have objection to the way that the standard lab testing is done, whether it be for a thyroid or for general lab values. People, they're not looking at the full picture. So when you're looking at a thyroid problem, you want to be looking at, okay, so where does the problem lie? If the numbers are low, where does the problem lie? Okay, so it could be that, number one, the pituitary isn't stimulating the thyroid. Well, that 1.5, 1.7, whatever, is a really good number for TSH, But we don't know if it's a good number unless we look at the total T4. Because we don't know if that total T4 is low and the pituitary is low, then I'm thinking your pituitary is not kicking in. See what I mean? But if that set T4 is perfectly normal, the total T4, but the free T4 is low, then I'm thinking there's a problem with too much binding globulin. And it's holding on to it. It's not allowing it to be free. Now, the test we just looked at will tell us a little bit more about whether the binding globulin is a problem, because the estrogen levels. So high estrogen will increase the thyroid binding globulin and decrease the free fractions. So if we look and we see estrogen dominance here, which we don't, you have estriol and estradiol. No, we actually see low estrogen in yours. So it's unlikely to be a binding globulin. It could be that the thyroid is, it's either going to be pituitary or thyroid, but we don't know. And so you get your total T4 tested.
Okay. So if I decide to pursue it further, I should ask for total T4. Any other numbers that you suggest would give me a better picture?
I mean, you could certainly get reverse T3 to see if that's part of the issue with the conversion, because there is definitely an underconversion, but we don't know if it's a thyroid output or it's probably not. I mean, there's other sources. I shouldn't say probably not. There's other causes of increased binding globulin. So you can get the reverse T3 and the total T4.
Total T.
And did you have
all
antibodies done? What about antibodies?
I didn't have those done.
Oh, you have to have antibodies done. Because this whole thing could be because you have antibodies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Antibodies are a mandatory part of thyroid testing.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, great. I'll follow up with that. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Cool. That was good. That was Oakland for that. Who else? I know it's kind of soon. You haven't dug into your materials with IRSPT, those of you who are new with that. But feel free to ask any questions that you have about the way the program's going to go. And we'll be doing an orientation on the 16th for that. Any other questions? Let's see. Jamie says chicory root tea is another option that helps to people transition. Yeah, I'm not sure that it has enough as that much caffeine, but that's good for people who really like that hot beverage and that taste. But I'd be curious to see if it may have other stimulating and supporting properties. So that's a good point. People do that, I know, a lot in those mixes. We have Tony. Hey, Tony.
Hi, Dr. Marie. I didn't realize this was an IRSPT call. Are you taking any questions?
No, it's any question. It's not any open office hours, but I was welcoming some new folks who just joined IRSPT.
Oh, awesome. Okay, well, I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I received a call from a person who's interested in working with me, and she's seeking nutritional support for a post-op bowel resection. She had 70% of her lower intestine removed. Due to some sort of obstruction, including the ileocecal valve, and she's 7 months post-op now, and she's doing a low FODMAP diet because she's had episodes of what she believes are some sensitivities to, even though she's healthy, some sensitivities to the plant food she's eating, and also she suspects she might have some small intestinal bacteria overgrowth, which, you know, she doesn't have that valve, probably.
Probably she doesn't have that valve, and it's very common after any kind of intestinal surgery.
Yeah, so she said that she really wants some support for recovering and healing of the intestines and proper functioning of the remaining digestive system. I was really happy to hear her say that. So I know that digestion starts in the mouth, so we're going to start with chewing food and doing blended food and maybe adding digestive enzymes. But my question is, how do we address the digestion of nutrients that would normally occur, you know, in that section of the small intestine that was removed?
Yeah, do you know if it was the whole jejunum?
That I'm not sure, but I'll certainly answer that question. This is just a basic strategy intake.
Right. So that's a question to ask. Yeah. Like, how much, how far up did it go? If it's duodenal function that's missing, then you oftentimes do like pre-digest food. So, you know, if somebody has like a gastric bypass, I'm talking to them about, since they don't have access to their duodenum, I'm talking to them about putting the digestive enzymes in the food, blending the food, putting the digestive enzymes in, letting it sit for a half hour and then eating it so that it gets absorbed. Well, it's a little trickier with part of the jejunum. Removed because that's where the absorption happens. So, yeah, I have, you know, not knowing where it goes, how far up it goes. Wow, this is a tricky one.
Well, she said that she's taking B12 supplements and she believes from what she said, I'm looking at the notes now to see if it's the section where the B12 is.
Well, the B12 is right at the ileum, right? So she's had the ileocecal valve removed. Maybe how far up into it? Is it just the valve and it's just, how many inches did she say?
She didn't say, she said 70%. So we're going to get more into that.
Yeah,
later.
Get into it. Is it 70% of the large intestine plus the valve, which means that the jejunum is intact, which is fine. We just have to deal with the rate, the motility and slowing things down so it doesn't go through there. So quickly, we have to look at B12 because it's absorbed there at the distal ileum. I would go back and look up, he just gave me an idea for another chart for our micronutrients because it's like, I was going to say go back to all of the micronutrients and see exactly where very few of them are absorbed in the distal ileum. So I think it's mainly the B12, that you have to worry about, but it might be some K because of the K being produced by the colonic bacteria. So we'll be looking at that, but that sounds like a good chart. Who wants to make that chart? Like go through all the micronutrients and make a chart of, and that says where the absorption happens because that'd be a cool chart to have. That would be a great chart to have.
It would be.
So look at that. So she has her jejunum intact. Then there's not too, it's not such a terrible deal. It's mainly dealing with that ileocecal valve being patent, mainly dealing with what she's doing, which is you want to move things down into the large intestine, but then you have to worry about how fast they go through. So it's just really tricky without the ileocecal valve. It's really tricky, right?
Yeah. But she's so up for, she said, I'm not looking for miracles. I'm just looking for ways to enhance my digestion, and she's willing to do whatever it takes. The only note she gave me was she said, looking for lower, that 70% of the lower small intestine. So I'll ask them.
Oh, of the lower small intestine. Okay.
Small intestine, yeah.
So if that means 75% of the, that would be the cecum and the ileum, right? And, I mean, the ileum and the jejunum. Right. So how much of the jejunum? If she still has a good part of her jejunum, then I would say really nutrient dense foods because it can go through there fast. You know, if she, my guess is that if she had some kind of obstruction like that, unless it was a genetic, physiologic, you know, structural thing, that there was some functional issues going on before that. So I would just support her every phase of her digestion. Like you said, the chewing, the calming, you know, the heart math before eating, bitters. I don't know that I'd give her stomach acid, but she may, but you can look at, I would look at bitters and digestive enzymes and, maybe even some cholagogues to make sure she digests the fat real, real well. I would, any vitamins you give her, I would give her sublingual or micellized, sublingual, micellized or liposomal. Okay. So sublingual or topical, of course. So, liposomal means that they're packaged in these little fat globules that just go right through into something called the chylomicrons and they get absorbed. So those are really good absorption capability. With the B12, I would do either the liposomal or sublingual or topical. Okay. Because if you, she just takes a pill with B12 in it, it ain't going to get absorbed because she doesn't have the place. She doesn't have that. Right. So I would do it that way. And any of her nutrients, just give her like the minerals, give her in the liquid kind of form, the ionic form that's going to get, you know, liquid fulvic acid mineral type things. So make sure she has her bases covered.
That's a good idea.
And then gut, you know, bugs, of course, right?
Yeah, can work on that.
Yep.
So I said this with the thyroid case. When she came to me with that, instead of running for the hills, I said, I've got this. I can do this.
You can do it.
Just started in the mouth, went my way down and help her. Exactly. And so she's really anxious to get a good baseline blood test. And
yep.
So I thought that this would be a good time to just test everything because she's over 52. She's 50. Well, she's 50 years old. And, you know, I would like one that includes thyroid and all that. Do you think that's unreasonable?
That's not unreasonable at all. If somebody's had surgery to remove part of their intestine, you want to check their nutrient status. So I would do that. And if she can swing it financially, I'd run the SpectraCell to see what the actual stores of those nutrients are so you know what you need to be supplementing.
Okay. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to do my thing. Thank you so much.
You get the tough cases. And by the way, I don't know if you noticed it or what, but on one of the videos I made, I kind of sort of talked about you. I meant to talk about your thyroid case. I didn't name your name. I just said, what are the people? And then and I don't know if that video was the one that got trashed because the sound was awful and I forgot to mention it in the real one, but it was kind of talking about your thyroid case. Like, you know, and she was really scared and we just talked her through it and this person had these great results. Because people need to know that it is scary when you see those cases, but it's all a matter of going back down to fundamentals, right? It was so great to hear Dr. Jess yesterday talking about that word what do I say all the time? Foundation. And if you just look at, well, what's going on? Where is it going on? Right? What could be the cause of this? Okay, the cause of some of this stuff is she had her intestine removed, but what was the cause of her having to have her intestine removed? Explore that, right? If she was born with it, that's one thing, but you don't get born with an obstruction in your intestine that doesn't manifest in symptoms until you're 54.
Right.
So what was that cause? What did she already have some stuff? Was it fecal impaction that calcified? Who knows, right? Really see if you can get to the heart of that. Because when you ask a lot of these questions, you go deeper and just keep asking why. Like, why is that happening? Why is that happening? Why is that? Like, ask yourself that. Okay, if that's malfunctioning, why could that be malfunctioning? What's before that? What's before that until you get to the base of the chain?
I can do that. She's willing to take me on, so I'm
excited. She's willing to. Yeah, I'm excited for you. And keep us posted.
I will. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Who else? Questions? Comments? I'm looking again. And Lynn, I didn't know if you didn't answer me, but did you know if there were any in the – I didn't see the answer anyway. About whether there are questions on the website. I'm going to go there. I keep going there, but then I answer other people's questions. No questions. Great. Okay, then I won't waste my time going there. Carol. Oh, Judy. Judy's was first. So is there a website that gives us more SNP results than Genetic Genie when you plug in 23andMe raw data? Yes, absolutely there are. If you go to mthfrsupport.com, mthfrsupport, and you do the same thing. They cost about $30 to get their report, but it's like 40-something pages, and it sorts it by the area that they're related to. So there may be a page on thyroid or another page on immune, another page on clotting factors. It's really good. And then the one that Jamie recommended, I have it in my list somewhere, but I don't remember it off the top of my head. If you don't mind putting that in again, Jamie, that would be awesome. But there's another one that gives you a report that has got a really nice report, and it's a really nice one for people to get too. So we'll get that posted too. Carol, I have a friend who told me after moving from New York to South Carolina, she had 15 UTIs in 3 years. Holy cow. Hasn't had them since she was in her 20s, now 66. Saw a urologist. Everything looked good. Pelvic floor good. They gave her $200 copay estrane inserted for vaginal atrophy and a tab of Cipro at night for maintenance, which seems to be helping for a few months. So another lady moved there from Rochester experienced the same thing. I'm stumped. She doesn't bathe or go in the ocean, or use vaginal cleansers. She does use the water. I mean, you're smart to suspect the water. I would suspect something like that. Even if she doesn't bathe, she is showering. She is laundering her clothes, assuming she didn't change laundry soaps in that move. But the difference is the water, right? And somebody else is having a similar problem. So I would look at that because, I mean, if you're washing your clothing in something that has some problems, you know, that the underwear that's sitting against the urethra can be problematic. I would ask her too about gut stuff. Has she also at the same time had any constipation, diarrhea, or gut stuff, which may be something that's different about the new environment, which caused some sort of infectious process going on in the gut? And then, you know, wiping and other kinds of hygiene, just normal hygiene stuff. There's always a transmittal from urethra from the anus. So those kind of things that I think you're right to look at water, Carol, quite frankly. But I would look at it being, you know, what else is there? Can they have their water tested? Sometimes a municipal water doesn't get clearly tested. So I'm not sure if there's some sort of an agency that will do water testing for bacterial components. I'd love to know if they've done a culture on her, right? If it's a culture that is a specific organism that just keeps coming back. Yeah, so Jamie just put it up. It's metabolichealing.com. And then there's a directory, 23andMe-test-interpretation. So if you go there, just go to the chat and click on the link that Jamie did. What we usually do with these chats is we do copy and paste them to a Word file. And if there are links in them, we'll post them with the recordings. Yeah, so, and I want to also point out, you know, Carol's person, right, her friend, the approach that they did with her, right? So they don't know what's wrong. They don't know why. They're not, like, investigating, like, why would this move from North Carolina to South, you know, New York to South Carolina do this? And what was different? Now, there is a stress with moving, right? And stresses do predispose you to UTIs, but 15 UTIs in 3 years. So there's clearly something there. So I would be going backwards, yeah, looking for a cause, but also what in her body might have shifted. Did her microbiome shift? Like if she's drinking the water too, you know, maybe there's something in the water that she's drinking which shifted her microbiome, and they also have a gut thing. So I'd always ask about other symptoms at the same time and see, you know, really get to the root of it and get to the heart of it. Okay, let's see if there's any more hands up. No more hands up? Okay. Well, I appreciate you guys being here. Thank you for your great questions, for sharing. And we will be back in a month from now at the beginning of June. We have another one of these INE office hours. For those of you in IRSPT and NEPT, we'll let you know. You should know on your site, there's a schedules list, which has all the calls that are specific to insulin resistance. And we're having the first one on May 16th. And then the other dates I don't have off the top of my head, but they are posted on your site. And please get active in the Facebook group and stay active for those of you who are already active. And I'll open up your line so we can all say goodbye, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Goodbye. Thank you for your great advice and support, as always.
You're so welcome. Bye now.
Bye-bye.